seeing your patients and then worrying about the admin stuff and then insurance if you're doing that and then the marketing and then like it's nonstop. So I think the most important thing that you have as a practitioner or a health professional is you have this unbelievable treasure chest, which is your knowledge. Like, and we just take it for granted. Like, oh yeah, like everyone knows to drink water. Do they? Or like, you know, you went to school for 10 years and you know something about methylation pathways that people don't even know exist, right? And you can explain that to them in a way that they're like, oh, like that is gold. And part of, I think, your job as a business owner, not just a practitioner, is to be able to extract what it is you do or what it is you know into some type of system that other people can walk your patients or clients through independently of you being there.
Welcome to the Anthropology Podcast. I'm your host, Megan Walker. As a former naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I align the intersection of personal performance, purpose, and innovative thinking in badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. Anthropology is the study and science of what makes an entrepreneur think, feel, and perform in a path compelled by a vision for helping others, solving problems, while building a life on your own terms. Together, we are exploring the health, mindset, and strategies that distinguish the world's best entrepreneurs. This is the Anthropology Podcast. Welcome to episode 219 of the Anthropology Podcast. I am really excited today to be joined by my friend Yuri L. Kame. Yuri is a former pro athlete, New York Times bestselling author, sought after business coach, and the founder of Healthpreneur. And I've known Yuri for a number of years outside of all of his accomplishments in business. And mostly what I enjoy so much about him is his introspection and his discipline and his ideas around how to grow a business. If you want to grow your practice or your business on your own terms, Yuri is someone you are going to want to listen to. This episode is kind of like biohacking for your brain when it comes to how you want to run your business. I am super excited to have Yuri here, and mostly I'm excited for you to have the chance to meet him. Yuri L. Kame, welcome to the Anthropology Podcast.
What's up, Megan? Thanks for having me.
Oh, it is totally my pleasure. I am excited to have this conversation today. I want to just jump into all things. Well, frankly, this is the perfect Anthropology episode because you do health and you do business and you do mindset, which is the intersection where we hang out. And I'm wondering if before we go deep on that, you can just share with everybody a little bit about your story. How did you arrive at this intersection in your own life?
Yeah. So I grew up wanting to play pro soccer from the age of like 10. That was my goal. So I dedicated all of my teenagers to training and doing all that stuff. And I was able to play professionally in my early 20s for a number of years. So I was very fit, but I realized that I was unhealthy. And how I realized that was I lost my hair when I was 17 to an autoimmune condition. And that was a real kick in the butt to be like, huh, something's going on here. So that really prompted me to get into not just like being active, but really like looking under the hood to discover, huh, maybe the way I was eating may have contributed to this for the past 15 or so years. And so that led me into studies of kinesiology, later into natural nutrition. And I started learning things in nutrition school that allowed me actually to regrow my hair. And I felt more energetic than ever before. And I was like, I was blown away. And I'm talking simple things like, how about try not eating dairy for a bit, you know, cut off the bread for a while, add more vegetables, like basic stuff. And I was like, oh my God. And it transformed my life. And I was able to regrow my hair, even though I kept my head shaved for a long time. Long story short, I got a tetanus shot a couple of years ago and then my hair fell out again. So we'll save that for another day. But that's really what prompted me to get into the world of helping people is I was like, man, like I suffered with low energy and like all this stuff for a while. And I'm like, and I didn't know the basics of nutrition and just stuff like that. I was like, there's got to be millions of people who don't know this. And so started working with clients one-on-one as a trainer and nutritionist. And then after doing that for 7 years and burning myself out 16 hours a day, I was like, nah, there's got to be a better way. And that's you know, 2006, started my business online, had no clue what I was doing, sold some workout programs, some nutrition stuff. 3 years later, it eventually took off and then built that company up to a really nice level. And we helped 500,000 customers around the world. And I wrote a New York Times bestselling book, blah, blah, blah. So the latter half of that company, I sold it a few years ago, but you know, the last couple of years of it, a lot of people in our space started asking me for business advice. And I was like, cool, awesome. And then it just kept happening over and over again. And I was like, maybe there's an opportunity here to help other health professionals build their businesses online. And that's where Healthpreneur came from. And that's, you know, the genesis of it. And our mission is to help a billion people end their suffering, whatever that looks like from a health perspective or now obviously a business perspective. But I just realized that I could have more leverage by helping other business owners build better businesses, and then they can collectively help more people. And so that's the mission that I'm on. And ultimately, really, it's, you know, when I really think about it, it's helping people become the best versions of themselves, right? Business is an extension of who we are. And I just think, you know, the deeper you get into this, the more you recognize that, like, you know, it's all up here. And if we can help people become better, their businesses get better, et cetera. So yeah, that's the journey in a nutshell.
Kind of feel like entrepreneurship is the ultimate self-help program.
It's amazing.
It's spiritual. There's just this reckoning, no matter what way, regardless of the business outcome, it is, it's a true challenge. One of the things I think you are just so good at is leveraging and scaling past yourself. And, you know, you've done this as a trainer, and you are doing this now in your business. And I've heard you speak on your systems with respect to coaching on so many different occasions. I'm wondering if you can speak to that a little bit, because I do think that it's a limiting belief that holds so many practitioners back, so many entrepreneurs back. And it is this story of, well, no one can do it like me.
Yeah.
And they become the cog in the wheel of leading to their own success. Can you just talk a little bit about how you reconcile that with yourself?
Yeah. Like, this is an area where you don't want to be the special snowflake. Be like, the goal of business is to become replaceable. And if you think you're irreplaceable, you will never have a business. You will always have a job. And that means, and I say this with all due respect to every practitioner out there, because it's not our fault. It's the system we were brought into. The system, which is very transactional, it's basically saying patient comes in and gets better. Let's say they go see a chiro for a back adjustment, right? Patient sees chiro, gets adjustment, feels better. Patient goes home, doesn't necessarily improve until they go back to chiro and sees it, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very transactional. The challenge is that the patient gets better when they see the chiro. The chiro gets paid when they see the patients. But if the chiro takes off for a week, none of it happens. No money, no impact. That's a fundamentally flawed business model. And yes, every profession is a little bit different if it's more knowledge-based, like a naturopath, et cetera. But I fundamentally think it's a major issue when, you know, the only thing worse than having not a full practice is having a full practice. I'm like, sorry, why are we applauding having a full practice? Why are we applauding having a waiting list, aka a suffering list? So you have a full practice, and what happens if you take off for 2 weeks? Oh, guess what? You don't make any money and your patients or clients don't get helped. That's called a job. And I think that's a fundamental business model issue that I'm on a mission to help people escape, because I don't think it's transformational. And I'm not saying that the work that practitioners do isn't impactful, because I do think it's the most impactful work out of any profession. I just think the model is just broken. And we know that burnout is one of the, other than like not as much revenue as people want, burnout is the number one complaint health professionals deal with, right? Whether they're frontline, you know, with everything with COVID, or if they're just in a private clinic, seeing your patients and then worrying about the admin stuff and then insurance if you're doing that and then the marketing and then like it's nonstop. So I think the most important thing that you have as a practitioner or a health professional is you have this unbelievable treasure chest, which is your knowledge. Like, and we just take it for granted. Like, oh yeah, like everyone knows to drink water. Do they? Or like, you know, you went to school for 10 years and you know something about methylation pathways that people don't even know exist, right? And you can explain that to them in a way that they're like, oh, like that is gold. And part of, I think, your job as a business owner, not just a practitioner, is to be able to extract what it is you do or what it is you know into some type of system that other people can walk your patients or clients through independently of you being there. And if you're not okay with that, then you have to be okay with the alternative, which is you have to be there all the time. And whatever comes with that, you have to be okay with. So I think, you know, looking at, you know, your business as, if I were to sell this business, would I be selling, like, could I remove myself from this business, or the people buying the business need me to be there all the time because I'm the performer and I have to be there all the time? And I think it's a good question to ask, even if you never want to sell your company or your business, because you'll start to look at how you do what it is you do in such a way that becomes more replicatable and thus less dependent upon you. And here's the interesting thing too, is that when you do this, a lot of times you'll actually produce better outcomes for your patients and clients, because you're actually thinking through how to better care for them, as opposed to just, you know, on the fly talking with them appointment by appointment. So I think that's probably a stepping stone, like a starting point for helping people extract. That's, you know, that's what I've done. That's what I help our clients do, extract their magic into a way that's a bit more systemized.
I love that you say this, because I've had all these practitioners. I'm like, what are you going to do when you get to the end of your career? They're like, oh, I'll sell my practice. And I was like, well, let's talk about that, because I suspect you're going to be disappointed with what that looks like, because ultimately you're selling a mailing list. Mm-hmm. And hopefully someone will want to go see that other practitioner if they're basically identical to you. It's like we just dig this hole over the course of our career. And then we're like, oh, I have no leverage here in terms of what I'm doing. How did you clue into this idea? Because this isn't actually the way most trainers think or practitioners think or individuals who are providing that service. What was it that you were like that pushed you over the edge in terms of making that transition?
I don't know if I knew this way back in the day, but I think when I was training clients, I remember vividly working out with a client of mine, and he's like working up a sweat. He's on the Stairmaster or something. And he's like, why don't you put your voice on tape? And I was like, that's a really good idea. I have no idea what that looks like, but that sounds really good. And this is just when the first iPod had come out in 2006-ish, or around there. And I started thinking about that. I was like, okay, so I work with all these clients. Well, what if I don't see them? They're going to work out by themselves, or they don't work out at all. So I'm like, if I were to put my voice on tape and record me on their headphones as their trainer, like they could listen to when I'm not there, I'm like, that's pretty cool. So that was my first product. It was an audio guided workout program. And that was my first introduction to productizing a service. And from that point on, even though we didn't sell that thing for like 6 months, because I had no clue how to market or anything, that was my first real thinking to like, huh, I can take what I do with people and turn it into some type of product. Now, when I say product, I don't necessarily mean you have to sell it as a product, but it could be like the system that could be embedded into some type of coaching or service deliverable. So I think that's where it started. And then over the years, you know, just kind of going deeper into, you know, working with different coaches and mentors and seeing how other businesses have been built. I think a really good book that I read a few years ago on this too is called Built to Sell. And it's a really great book that's told in kind of like a story format. And I think it's a really simple read for people to understand how, like in the case of that book, basically a service provider in the context of like a marketing agency, he kind of did everything. And then he gets guidance from a mentor to help him narrow down and really productize one really big aspect of their business. And it's a really, really good, easy read for most people to wrap their head around this.
Do you think for most practitioners that selling their business on the backside is an option for them? And if it's not an option, where do you see that legacy move with respect to their business?
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, if you build a personal brand, like I sold my first business, which was Uri Elkame. Like that was the name of, like, it still exists, right?
You sold Uri Elkame?
I did. I didn't sell my name. Like, I mean, I didn't sell me, but I sold the business, right? Like the entity. And the reality is you're not going to get the multiple that you want because you're attached to it. So that's, if you understand that, cool. Build the heck out of it as much as you can. But I think it's, you want to look at, I don't know. I mean, having sold that business, there's a lot of value in building a personal brand, especially nowadays with, you know, everyone's an influencer. There's a lot of value in personal brands. The downside is that it becomes less of an exitable type of business.
Right.
If you build a corporate entity type of business, there's less personality to it, not all the time, but sometimes, and then that becomes less connected to your audience. So I think it's a blend of both, which is nice, where you can build maybe an entity that, you know, has its own name that's not you, but maybe initially you're the face of it. You can build a bit more of the person behind the brand. But I think if you build a business that is very heavy on cash flow, like the business, the way I see business now is like the business is the vehicle that generates cash flow. And then that cash is removed out of the business and to put into other investment vehicles that then build your wealth. So whether or not the business is ever sold is less relevant because the focus is on generating cash flow. And I say all of this with the context that what you're doing is actually helping people, right? So I'm not just like talking about...
Always. It's always the lens through which we have these conversations, for sure.
Yeah. So if I'm talking about making money or all, like, just please understand, like, it's always in service of others. So that's the way I look at it now. It's like, build the business so it's heavy on cash flow. But if you build the business properly, it actually, I think you should build the business as if you were going to sell it, even if you didn't want to sell it.
Right.
And I think... because you never know where you want to be 10, 20, 30 years down the road. But I think if everything's heavily reliant on you, it's going to be tricky. So
it is going to be tricky. And to that end, and I love this idea, create the cash flow and then invest it in other places so that you are wealth building. And I know just saying that wealth building for some people, they're like, oh, that's for other people. It's not, it's for anyone. Like that, you can do that in a job. You can do that in your business. I'm really curious when you have, you know, coaches or practitioners or individuals that you're working with who are like, well, I have a business and I have a clinic or I have an entity over here with a name and then there's me. Like, how do I reconcile and bring these pieces together? And as someone who built such a strong brand associated with your name, what is your recommendation around how you tie these two entities together?
I mean, it can go one of two ways. Like, I mean, they can be one and the same, right? And, you know, if you have a clinic, a lot of practitioners, let's say they're going virtual. So they're asking, like in our case, we help them go virtual. So they're like, do I set up a separate company or is it one and the same? And honestly, it could be the same company. It's just a different extension of how you provide care. It could be, or some of them want complete separation. So they set up a completely different corporate structure for the dream business that they're building. And that becomes the escape pod, if you will,
right,
from the, you know, the initial business. So I think it obviously depends on where they see themselves in the future. And I think that's a really important consideration is don't worry about now in the past. Like, think about where you want to be in 5, 10 years and build it now for that. Don't worry about like what's going on now. And then obviously like seek good counsel in terms of like, you know, best practice in terms of structure and all that kind of stuff. But I think you've mentioned this before, clarity is important, right? Yeah. You can't make good decisions from a place of confusion. So I think spending time to think and also understanding that you're not going to have all the answers right away. It's like driving through fog. You get more clarity the further you go forward. But I think, you know, having a good sense of where you want things to be, or at least different than they are now, is going to be an important catalyst in that decision-making process.
You mentioned this idea of spending time thinking. And I think one of the things that happens with entrepreneurs is we're like, I'm doing all the time. And I love that you just threw it in there. I don't think you were intentionally like, let's pivot the conversation to finding time to think. How do you create space to be creative within your own business? Because you're at a place in your business where you really have to do that. It's not about the doing all the time. Yeah. Now it's about how do I innovate? How do you, as someone with 4 kids and a big business, how do you create and carve out that time?
It helps that the kids are in school. But honestly, even before that, like, I mean, we were in Australia for 3 months with them before COVID hit. So it was like with them all the time. You find a way. So for me, like the saving grace of my life has been my morning routine. And I get up at 3:48 in the morning every day of the week.
Sorry, you just say that one more time, Yuri?
3:48 a.m.
Okay. Yeah. Just want to make sure we heard that correct. We're going to go there next. Yep, keep going.
I'm not saying that anyone has to do that, but that's just, I know that for me because maybe I'm a slow learner. I don't know, but it's taken me a long time to recognize that my best work is done first thing in the morning. And I'll have days like even today where it's like 9:30 and I've got my first, like my team huddle at 9:30 and I'm like, I'm done. Like there's nothing else I can do here. Like I've done the creative work that I need to do. And the thing I've had to come to accept over the years is that, okay, if you're done, so 9:30, I have a team huddle, 10 o'clock, I coach clients from typically 10 to 11. And then the rest of the day is like, I could technically be done. And it took me a long time to be okay with that. Because the challenging thing is like when you start everything yourself as the business owner and you wear all the hats,
right,
you build a habit and condition yourself to always be busy. And that becomes a very, very challenging momentum to get away from, especially if you're like A-type like I am and achievement oriented, just like more and more and more. And now it's like I've recognized that I went for a walk for 5 hours on Monday. I took a 5-hour walk and I had team meetings on that day. That's my day of meetings. All of my meetings now, because it's nice weather, are done while I'm walking. I'm just outside all the time. And for me, I've recognized that there's only three things I need to do. One is teach, coach, or sell. For me, it's all the same thing. Second thing is move my body. And then the third thing is think. That's it. Like, moving and thinking kind of happens together sometimes. If I'm coaching my team, that can happen as I'm walking as well. But I get my best ideas when I'm walking or running or working out or on the Peloton. For me, it's like before it used to be workout time and then work time, right?
Yeah.
It's all the same. Like it's for me, it's just like instead of being in front of my computer, I'm just in the forest. And I've just come to terms with that's the way I operate best. So yeah. And I think it's also a balance of consumption and space. So when I go for a walk, sometimes I'll listen to a podcast. I'm very careful of the inputs I bring in because, you know, obviously I think it's important, but there's also times where I don't want any inputs. I just want that space to just listen to the birds and allow that, whatever that thing is, to give my brain that, my headspace, that space to then come up with these ideas. Never have I come up with the game-changing idea working behind my computer, right? It's always been on an airplane, walking, working out, in the shower. I don't know. I feel if I can escape more of that stuff or do more of that stuff, it's going to be better. And then I think a number of years ago, I read this in Richard Branson's book, I think Losing My Virginity. He was saying that he spends like 3 hours a day swimming. And I was like, okay, that's... Some people might say he's not committed or whatever, but it's like, no, he's smart because he's built the infrastructure around him to allow him to do that. And that's, he even said that that's where his best ideas come from. So yeah, I think for me, it's just been kind of finding my own cadence, my own rhythm, and listening to my body and what works best for me and just doing my best to honor that.
I love this. And I want everyone to hear that. Like, I think the wisdom here, some people are going to be like, okay, I have to get up at 3:48. I think the wisdom here is not that piece, people. Yeah. It's not that piece. Don't let go of your REM sleep quite yet. The wisdom here is that you found the cadence that works best for you. And that it's not about what Gary Vee is doing or what this person is doing. It is like, this is what works best in my life. And in some cases in my life right now, because things can always change.
Yeah. And I'll be very transparent too. Like the last 2 weeks have been a bit of a shit show for me in the mornings. Like I have not wanted to get out of bed early, and I've been thinking like, why is that happening? All right. Like we've hit some interesting goals and I'm like, So it's been an interesting time to introspect, to look at like what's next and like expanding the vision so that I'm as motivated as I have been to get up at that time. And also, understand that I was at a point, I want to say a month ago, where I was like, I just need a week off. Like, I'm not going to get up early. I'm not going to worry about certain things. I'm just going to, we talked about recovery on our podcast, and I'm just going to do nothing and chill. And again, being okay with that and like, hey, dude, it's all good, man. The world is still going to be okay, And yeah, I think that was important. So I'm not a machine.
The naturopath in me just wants to ask what time you go to bed.
I go to bed at latest 9:30. Sometimes I beat my kids to bed at like 8 o'clock.
I'm just checking for the audience.
Yeah, for sure.
not necessarily where I want to go deep, but I'm fascinated by that. I'm fascinated by people's mornings. And I love it when we just see it. Everyone can do it differently. There isn't actually one subscription. Yeah. But I know you've been working on a project, which is really about pushing people outside of their comfort zone, which is one of the things I love about the work that you do, is you are so talented at elegantly and empoweringly moving people to the edge of their comfort zone. And then I feel like you're really good at like convincing them to jump. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the Strong 60 and what this secret project is you've been working on and how it's going to have this influence on people.
Yeah. So Strong 60 was born out of my innate desire to help everyone, right? Which all health professionals have at some core level, but recognizing that most people are not ready for that help, right? So whether it's at our higher level programs or whatever it is, but even looking at my mom, right? Or my brother or close, you know, friends and family. And I understand that I can't want other people to change. They have to want it. So I said, okay, well, what if I put something together first and foremost for myself? Because I've also recognized that I'm a very high quick start, but not so great at finishing. I'm like, why don't I just challenge myself to just friggin' do something and stick to it for 60 days and just do it no matter what. And so I created this program that I kind of piecemeal together over the past, I would say, year, and then really brought together in the past 6 months, that was, how do I do things, or how do I set myself up where I'm building good habits, but also in a way that's completely opposite to like what BJ Fogg talks about, which is tiny habits, right? He's all about tiny habits, do little things step by step. I'm like, I completely understand that. But what I want to do is I want to do the complete opposite. I want to put myself in a state where I challenge my brain to be like, dude, I don't want to do this today, and work through that. And it sounds really counterintuitive. And, you know, maybe I was inspired by some, you know, reading I was doing with some, you know, some Navy SEAL stuff. There's different elements that have, you know, brought this all together.
I'm suddenly scared when you say Navy SEAL.
Yeah,
keep going.
No, for sure. I've always really admired discipline, like discipline in the sense of like doing something consistently, right? I think there's a lot of power to that. And I think that's also something that I haven't had to the level maybe that I've wanted. So in this kind of creation, it's been like for myself, how do I stay more disciplined on basic things, right? So the crux of the, or the foundation of the Strong 60 is really I call it the 3S framework. So it's stretch, strengthen, and sweat. And how that looks is through how we move our body, how we use our minds, how we move our career business forward, how we move relationships to the next level. So as an example, in a workout, you can sweat. You can also have a workout where it's more stretch focused. You can have a workout that's more strength focused. In the context of a relationship, what are some things you can do with people in your life that strengthen those relationships in ways that you haven't done before? So for instance, the Strong 60 has 10, we call them the daily 10. So it's 10 daily habits that we do throughout the day. One of them is send a thoughtful message, like in the form of a card or a video, to someone in your life. And it might be your spouse, your mom, kids, people you haven't spoken to in months or whatever. And it's something that very few of us do, including myself. And I'm like, just do it every single day. So I would go on a walk and I just think of someone. I'm like, hey man, I know it's been like a year and a half since we spoke, but I just wanted to let you know how much I appreciate you, or, you know, something along those lines. And it's just so amazing to see how that can impact someone's life completely out of the blue. To receive that type of message or a thoughtful card. And it's so profound of what that did to some of the relationships that I wanted to rekindle or strengthen in some cases. Made that person feel good, made me feel good. So essentially there's 10 daily habits that span kind of physical health, mental discipline, and relationship strengthening, like what I just mentioned, that for me, I consider this like a human development program, like how to become the best version of yourself by doing things that make you uncomfortable, that when you don't want to do the thing, you're just going to do it anyways because you've committed to doing it. And it's not about pushing yourself or laying in, you know, cold mud in San Diego, California, like the Navy SEALs.
Oh, good.
Yeah. But one of the things one of the daily tenets, I call this the calm in the eye of the storm. And you talked about like my cold plunge. So a number of months ago, I set up a chest freezer. I turned it into basically a cold plunge. And the reason I did this is I said, obviously there's health benefits to doing that. And I'm like, okay, health benefits aside, I want to do this because I want to do something that challenges my mental, you know, that voice. I call it the whiner inside. So the calm in the eye of the storm, and I think this, again, having four boys at home, I found this is going to be helpful for me. I'm like, how can I put myself in a sympathetic state and train myself to be parasympathetic? And so by putting myself in cold water, whether that's a cold shower or a cold plunge, I spend about 3 minutes in there and train the body to get into a deep breathing rhythm where I can move into more of a parasympathetic state. And so what I noticed as I was doing this was I was able to translate that practice into dinner time, for instance, with the family. And if the kids were just going nuts, I'd be able to come back to that breathing and how I anchored it. And I was able to come back to that state of calm in spite of the craziness going on around me. And I thought that was a pretty good skill to develop. And I wish I had that, you know, a lot earlier on in my life. And it's still not like perfected. But I think that's something that all of us can do a little bit better of, is learning how to be calm in the chaos, right? If you've got stuff going on in your business or in your personal life or whatever, listen, it's all good, right? Just like the Jamaicans say, everything I read, right? So learning how to get ourselves into that place of calm and just being okay with what is and finding better meaning and then challenging that little voice in our head that doesn't support us a lot. So a lot of the program is built around allowing the winner in our minds, not the whiner, to direct more of our life and to do things that are going to strengthen that as opposed to weaken us. So in a nutshell, that's what it's all about.
I love that. The winner, not the whiner.
Yeah.
Ah, it's so true. And you know, even the word discipline, I was like, we have a weird societal relationship with the word discipline. It's like we want to give people all this advice, but we don't want them to have to do anything that requires discipline because it feels mean or it feels unattainable. And I love that you just are like, no, like that's part of it actually, is having that element of discipline. What role does discipline play in terms of the success of your business?
I think it's been big. I mean, I think it's, you know, I wrote about this in the program because there's 30 principles that I talk about as kind of fundamental, I don't know, ways of living, if you will. And I talk about like discipline makes the dream a reality. So when I was 10, I set the goal of playing pro soccer and I was disciplined for 10 years to do that. And I gave up family trips, jobs, girlfriends, etc. And that was for me, and I still know that I wasn't as disciplined as I could have been. I'm very honest. I'm like, yeah, you can kind of drop the ball here and there. But I think the same thing with my business. If you asked my closest friends or family, they'd be like, yeah, like dude is like laser focused and disciplined on making this happen. And I think it's important. Discipline, I think, ties in with persistence, is just keep going. Like business, you have to recognize that business is like a boxing match. And you're usually the person getting punched in the face all the time. So just
truth,
just like, be like, yep, sign the dotted line. I'm willing to get punched in the face every day. And I'm still going to get back up and keep going with a smile on my face. Yeah. Call it discipline, call it persistence, call it whatever you want. I think it's massively important. That's the only reason I'm here, to be honest. I've had easily thousands of more failures, quote unquote, than successes. But I think that's what makes you successful, right? Is just being able to move through that and learn from it. And I think it's amazing. I tell my kids, I'm like, my son Luca, they had to build a bridge in class and his broke. I'm like, dude, high five. You're the only kid in the class whose bridge broke and it's all good, right? Who cares, right? What can you learn from this? How can you turn this into a positive? So I love that ability to, because it's happened so much. Mm-hmm. It's just fun. Like, how do I turn something that's kind of shitty into something that's good?
Yeah.
And again, I think it's a skill that can be developed. So
persistence is everything. I've been saying this with my 9-year-old Naya lately. She's like, I need help with this. I'm like, do you need help or do you need persistence? And it started at the ski hill. She's like, I need help with my boots. And I was like, I'm doing two other kids' boots right now. And then she's like, I got it. And I was like, that was persistence. Yeah. And I want you to start to understand when you need one versus the other. As we walk into a new year, it's been a challenging year for practitioners. You work with health entrepreneurs. Yuri, where do you think people should be directing their energy and their persistence and their discipline now that we're moving into the backside of the era of COVID?
Well, I think it's going to be the same as any other time. It's just going to be getting clarity on what you want in life and just looking at your business to say, is this the vehicle to get me there? Right? Whether it's, you know, the impact, the income, the lifestyle. And if it's not going to change. Like if you keep doing the 60 hours of patient visits a week and you're expecting that to miraculously change, it's not going to unless you do something about it. Obviously, I'm very biased that I think most practitioners should be online in some capacity because I just think there's way more leverage and freedom that can come with that. But again, like everyone has to you know, walk their own path. But I think the most important thing is just you got to look at what you're doing. And if what you're doing is fulfilling you, it's filling up your bucket, your cup, it's allowing you to live the life you want to live, then keep doing it. But if it's not, and you're saying it is, like if you're saying you want something different and you're not willing to do that thing to get there, that's when you got to check yourself. That's when you have to be able to step into the uncomfortable and be like, dude, nothing is going to change if I keep doing what I'm doing. Right? You used the analogy earlier about the trains, you know, one going into the station, the other one leaving. It's the same thing. Like, just like the thing I say is like, just because you got a degree or you went to school for X number of years and you have a bunch of letters behind your name, that is like the token that allows you to play the video game, right? Now you're level one. How do you get to level two? And if you're level five, how do you get to level six? And if you're okay saying level one, don't say you want to get to level two. But if you do, you got to sharpen the sword and do what you got to do to get to the next level.
So brilliantly put, and a perfect place for us to transition the nature of our conversation. So I've got a section of our interviews. I call them our KPIs. So just like we have KPIs and key performance indicators in our business, I believe we have them in how we live our lives as well. So I've got a few rapid fire questions for you,
Yuri. Bring it on.
Hang tight. Okay. What is your most recommended book of all time?
The answer I'm going to give you is not the right answer, but it's the answer that comes to my head right now because I think it's freshest. It's a book called It's All in Your Head by an American rapper named Russ. If you want to get like an inside view of what someone with massive confidence thinks like, read the book. It is awesome.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's so good. It's so good.
No one has ever brought this book up in this line of questioning before. I love it.
Yeah.
What is your favorite health hack?
Drink a liter of greens every day.
Nice.
Yeah.
How would you define your purpose?
Purpose is massive growth and contribution. So that's number one, I can leave the biggest impact I possibly can. But also when I leave this planet, I meet up with my highest version of myself. And we're like identical twins. For me, that's important.
I love this piece. And last question for you, entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think it's a bit of both. Yeah.
I love it. This is the moment your political career started, right? No, I'm just kidding. I do. It is. You know what? It is a bit of both. And it's the most fascinating question I could ask because everyone's got a different answer. Uriel Kame, it is a pleasure having you on the podcast. Where can we direct people so they can learn about all the amazing things you're up to?
Instagram, I am at healthpreneur. Don't follow Uriel Kame. That's my previous business that I have nothing to do with. You're just going to see recipes and smoothies and stuff. But at healthpreneur is where I am on social. Our podcast is The Healthpreneur Show, which we're just recording on to have you on as a guest, which was awesome. So those are probably the two best places. And then everything flows from there.
And we will hook everyone up in their show notes. Yuri, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Megan.
Anthropology is the study and science of what makes entrepreneurs tick. It's the confluence of the mindset, strategic thinking, and health that we bring to the table as contributors, as purpose seekers, as individuals building out a better tomorrow. The work that we do on the Anthropology podcast impacts the mindset, the business tactics, and the health of those individuals who are working hard to change the world, to leave a legacy for the future. The best way that we can reach more people with the message of the Anthropology podcast is if you help us share it. If the message that we shared in today's episode is something that resonates with you, or if you know someone who would benefit from hearing it, please send it to them directly. And if you have felt moved by the content that we have shared, I would love it if you could leave a review wherever it is that you pick up your podcast. Until next week, live life on, in, and with purpose. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker, and I will talk to you real soon.